How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. It is September 28th. We are live here today. I apologize for the opening segment in which we were not live, in fact. But here we are, connected live and ready to go for 2 hours here on Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. We got a lot of news to get into here today. Mike, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Doing pretty good outside of my football team. Doing very, very poorly right now. So I'm more than happy to be doing this show right now, even more than usual.
That's right. That's right. Did you watch UFC last night?
I did. I saw the Gamburian fight on the Fight Pass card, and then I didn't see anything up until the main event, so I missed the domination of Dominic Cruz coming back after almost 3 years off of just weighing lace to Mizugaki. But I saw the main card, which was really, you know, I know not a whole lot of people were excited about, I guess some general public was not excited about this, but I think the media was obviously excited. We were all excited. Hardcore fans were really excited for the fight. So I know a lot of people were kind of poo-pooing it, looking at Demetrius Johnson on top and figuring, okay, this is going to do another 85,000 buys. But I think it's going to do much better than that because the word of mouth of how stacked this card was as far as, you know, a fight fan would go, I think that word traveled. And I think there were people that got really excited as it got close. And I think the people that did order it were quite rewarded.
Yeah, it was funny because I actually had a lot of people that were super excited for this show. I shouldn't say a lot of people, but compared to the usual crowd at my house for an average UFC nowadays, which is about zero, I had at least two or three people over last night, which does not sound like a lot. But here in 2014,
you got a small house, though. Fills it up.
Sure, exactly. They were hanging from the rafters. But they were interested in the show. They were interested in the return of Dominic Cruz. They were interested in Conor McGregor's fight. Didn't care one bit about the main event. But it was, they thought it was a decent card. And so I actually had people over to watch the UFC event last night, which I haven't had since probably, you know what? I don't remember because July I was in Vegas for the show. But, I mean, it was a very newsworthy show. Obviously, this was supposed to be Jones-Cormier, but that got thrown out the window. And so instead, we had Eddie Alvarez's UFC debut against Donald Cerrone. We had Conor McGregor against Dustin Poirier, which Dana White claimed 10% of the tickets sold in Las Vegas were sold to the Irish. So he was a big draw last night.
Joe Rogan in the interview said everybody in Ireland, everybody is watching this fight right now. At 5 o'clock in the morning, I believe it was for them, but everybody was watching.
Yes, he claimed that Ireland had shut down for the fight, and it was like, of course it shut down. It's 4 o'clock in the morning over there. Nothing's happening except this fight.
But people, when they woke up, they were throwing babies in the air. They were so happy to find out the news that Conor McGregor dominated.
That's right. The return of Kat Zingano. There was a crazy Yoel Romero fight with Tim Kennedy. And yes, the return of the former 135-pound champion, Dominic Cruz. Dominic Cruz, of course, had not fought since 2011. He was 1 month shy of 3 straight years without fighting. And what happened? He came back in a match with a big name, Takeya Mizugaki, who, if Mizugaki would have won, he probably would have been in line for a title shot. But instead, Dominic Cruz went in there. He double-legged the dude. He beat the living hell out of him. 1 minute, 1 second of the first round, Dominic Cruz, after almost 3 full years off, looked, I think, better than he's ever looked, actually. Although you can't really tell with a minute. But destroyed Mizugaki, and now it looks like,
it's so damn long since we've seen him. It just was extra impressive.
Well, you know, a lot of I was not the world's biggest Dominic Cruz fan.
Oh, I remember this.
I'm not going to lie.
Boxing style.
I hated his stand-up. But you know what? He went in there, and he was aggressive. He went after this guy. He did a sweet double leg, and he just pounded on the guy. I thought he looked great.
Yeah, he was taking no chances with leaving his legs exposed at all, did he? You know, those knee problems that he's had that's kept him out for so long. And, you know, it worked perfectly in that after the fight, Dana White said, and deservedly so. I guess deservedly so. I know there's going to be some people that would complain, but Dominic Cruz is one of those special situations where, you know, he didn't lose his title. They gave him the interim title. Obviously, he was knocked to interim status. When everything went down with the first injury, they finally had to pull the belt off of him altogether. And a performance like this against Mizugaki, who is a, you know, a top three guy in that weight class, to go out and do that. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry for anybody else, but he deserves that shot against Dillashaw.
You know, it's kind of funny. I didn't even mention this last night because I didn't really think about it, but I'm thinking about it right now. You had, he was not the only person coming back from two knee surgeries. Kat Zingano was coming back. She'd blown out, I believe, both knees. And she was fighting Amanda Nunez, which ended up being a great fight. Kat Zingano is in line now for a shot against Ronda Rousey. But in the first round, she comes out against Amanda Nunez. And Amanda, the very first thing she did was kick Kat Zingano right in the knee. It's like, wow. Kicked her right in the knee and then just pounded on her for a round. I mean, it wasn't a 10-8 round because Zingano made a comeback at the end of the round.
See, but for a person that was moving a lot on the ground, although she was dodging some punches, she was taking, as far as at least aesthetically, she was taking one hell of a beating, even though she was doing a damn good job defending.
Oh, yeah. She makes this big comeback and ends up winning, but I just was like, I can't believe that the first thing you did was kick poor Kat Zingano in the knee. And Kat Zingano is just not going to give up. And she, you know, she looked great after she made her big comeback there, but she's in line for Ronda Rousey, so that should be fascinating.
Yeah, she looks to be getting the shot on January 3rd, as long as she's able to go. She said in the post-fight press conference she would be able to go, and in some ways her story is almost more impressive than Cruz's, with some of the heartache she's had in her life with her boyfriend committing suicide and losing her job and having the injuries and all that sort of stuff. It's going to make for quite the story. Obviously, it made for quite the story last night and certainly will make for quite the story because there's going to be a lot of people. It's not that people will want to see Ronda Rousey lose, but I have a feeling the crowd's going to be a little bit split because it's hard. It's really hard to root against Kat Zingano, and it's just another feather in the cap on January 3rd.
And then we had Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor, of course, he is UFC's Ric Flair. I have no other way to put it, except he's not a champion. He came out wearing an outfit that some people have been looking around online, and they have found a suit from the 1980s that Ric Flair wore that appears to be the exact same suit that Conor McGregor was wearing during the press conference. I believe he called it a rhino skin suit. I think it was elephant skin. I think he was trying to claim his suit was made of an elephant, which it wasn't.
I think elephant tusk ivory is, I think, what he meant to say. I think he said elephant skin ivory, but who knows? Whatever it was quite impressive and looked like it may have cost that much.
Oh, yeah. This guy is very charismatic. He's an incredible trash talker. And it was a big night tonight because he was going up against by far his most gifted opponent, Dustin Poirier, who I believe was ranked number 5, if the rankings mean anything to you. And the big question was, is this guy for real? Or is the hype train of Conor McGregor going to come to a rapid and violent stop? And the answer was, the hype train is still going. As he said, he is plowing through a division filled with has-beens and rookies, I believe he said. Rookies and has-beens. He beat Dustin Poirier 1 minute and 46 seconds of the first round, finished him. And they have really got something with Conor McGregor. And it looks like he's probably getting the next championship fight, which is probably a little bit early, but what the heck? Go for it. What did you think of Conor last night?
I guess you might as well, from a sporting point of view, he doesn't deserve it. From a promotional point of view, strike while the iron is hot. He looked fantastic, and it was one of those things. Poirier's a hell of a fighter, and it's not like I wanted to take
actually.
McGregor.
Let's hold that thought. Oh. We'll get to when we come back from the break, and take your phone calls. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday live, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, And I cut Mike off before the break because he was talking about Dustin Poirier. Mike, go ahead. Last night's UFC.
You know, I don't know where I left off there, but Poirier was a you know, incredibly impressive opponent. And I was just, I was kind of on the fence. There was a couple fights I was on the fence about, but I just, the way things were going for McGregor, it was one of those where, you know, I'm loading up all my stuff and I've got it firmly placed on top of his bandwagon and locked down, and I'm ready to take the ride with him. And I took him last night. I didn't think it would be as impressive as a performance as he had going out there and blowing him out, not only blowing him out, looking like he was talking trash to him before he landed the left hand off the side of Poirier's head that initially had knocked him down. He says something to him before that. And then after the fight, certainly said a whole lot of stuff. And this, the whole night, even though I know hardcore MMA fans and the newer MMA fans do not like the connection that there is to professional wrestling, but realistically, it's about promotion. And all of these sports, professional wrestling, boxing, mixed martial arts, are all loosely tied in with each other. It's all half-naked people getting sweaty on a canvas mat, and you promote all of these things the same way. And you had Kat Zingano last night, which is certainly a story leading into Ronda Rousey, who is an opponent that you need to hype up opponents for because she has been so dominant. You have a guy in Demetrius Johnson, who obviously nobody was really too heavily interested in the main event against Chris Carrizo. But bottom line is, no matter where you want to put him, he's a top 10 pound for pound fighter and an incredibly impressive performer. You had controversy with Yoel Romero and Tim Kennedy, which, you know, it even got old school after the fight on Twitter, where Kennedy was bringing up rules like the old NWA rule book. He was bringing up the Nevada State Athletic Commission rules about a fighter sitting on a stool. And then he had Conor and Donald Cerrone, you know, Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who welcomed Eddie Alvarez into the UFC with just a dominant performance himself. And he's always great and just a huge ball of charisma. Then you get to Conor McGregor, who's wearing that Ric Flair suit. I don't know whether he went to St. Louis and actually got the suits Flair would get made that, you know, had the NWA heavyweight champion, you know, sewn into the inner pocket. But he may as well have. He looked fantastic. He held court at the press conference afterwards. Dana White didn't do a scrum, but Conor McGregor picked up that slack without an issue. And he is a guy that, hey, he may flame out. He may get a lot of people upset with him. But I think for right now, the UFC needs stars, and they recognize that, and they see a star in Conor McGregor, and I think a lot of us see a star in Conor McGregor. So again, I've got all my stuff firmly attached to the Conor McGregor bandwagon, and maybe he shouldn't get the next title fight, but if that's what happens, so be it. At least it's going to be exciting, and there's going to be fun leading into it.
The fight with Eddie Alvarez, I mean, I had predicted that Alvarez was going to lose the fight. And it was only because Alvarez is a great fighter, but it is historically been very tough to come from Bellator and walk into the UFC and do great in your first fight.
Really, and anywhere for that matter, to be honest,
exactly.
For the, you know, grand scheme of things, almost anywhere.
Yeah. You come from WEC, you come from, it doesn't matter where you come from, your first fight in UFC. And in fact, somebody on our board, I can't remember where it was. It may have been Mookie Gunn, actually. Somebody had, they'd investigated the first fights of people who were coming from other organizations, and they had determined that, in fact, the famed Octagon Jitters, it's a real thing. Whether people want to admit it or not when they have that first fight, virtually everybody that comes in has Octagon Jitters. And obviously, some of them win, but many of them have a really tough time in the first fight, and then they come back in the second fight, and they often do great. But Alvarez was walking in. He was walking in as a guy who, at least in the hardcore MMA media, I mean, people have been talking about Alvarez and UFC forever. If you've listened to Wrestling Observer Radio, I mean, Dave spent hours talking about Eddie Alvarez and the deal with Bellator and UFC. So he was coming in. This had been in the makings for years, been talked about ad nauseum, and it's just tough to be the guy. And you come in and your first opponent is a Donald Cerrone, who is not like, Donald Cerrone is not the best fighter in the world, but you know what? He's a very, very talented guy. He's actually like, I think that Donald Cerrone is even more talented than people give him credit for, because I mean this in the nicest way possible to Donald Cerrone, if he happens to be listening, which I doubt that he is. and he would probably agree with it anyway. The dude is like a complete, he's completely out of his mind. And he doesn't train like a normal fighter. He does things that normal fighters don't do. He's out just, he was out wakeboarding for the last several weeks.
Dana was not happy about that. I can see some writers being put in Cerrone's contract. Don't hurt yourself before the fight.
That's right. This guy's just crazy. But he's still, I mean, he's so talented that he can do all of this crazy stuff and go in and win fights. And he had a rough first round, but he picked it up in the second and third and destroyed Alvarez's knees. And he ended up winning the fight. So a rough first fight for Eddie Alvarez. But hey, that's what happens when you first come into the UFC. And then,
and you know what, too? And this is, it's not, this is no insult, too, because he had very good wins over Pat Curran and obviously, you know, Shinya Aoki and the split with Chandler. But a lot of people, I think, that are have been MMA fans and have been Eddie Alvarez fans, they're still thinking of 2007, 2008 Eddie Alvarez. And not that that's, he's that far away from it, and he's still a relatively young guy at 30 years old and everything, but I think that gets stuck in people's heads too, and that was the big thing with the Pride guys coming in. These guys are going to be different than how they looked in Japan. And that, again, that Kawajiri fight was a long, long time ago now.
And the big controversy was the Yoel Romero fight against Tim Kennedy. They had a fight, and in the second round, Yoel Romero was winning the fight until in the second round, he got rocked. And Tim Kennedy was laying a beating on the guy, and it looked like it was 5 seconds from being stopped when the bell rang to end the round. And Romero just like stumbles to his corner. He looks like he's done. And then the round, the third round is ready to begin, and Yoel Romero is still on his stool. He's sitting there on the stool like he's not going to come out. And the referee is arguing with him in his corner, and his corner's going in, and they're going out. You know, it really was only, I think it was about 26 seconds or something like that, that he was, 26 extra seconds that he got before the round started.
28.
But because of the circumstances, it just felt like an eternity. So finally, ref John McCarthy, he doesn't dock him a point. He doesn't disqualify him. He doesn't end the fight because he won't get off his stool. He finally gets the third round going, and Yoel Romero does a giant comeback and knocks out Tim Kennedy. So it was the fight was just like between the
a
fight
lot of
itself.
Wrestling on this card, I'm telling you.
Oh my God, it was just crazy. And of course, Tim Kennedy is going to you know, he's going to contest the decision and everything like that. And, well, first off, what do you think about this, Mike? What should have happened for those that saw this fight? What was your, what do you think is fair here?
What would really be fair is that they make it a no contest and the UFC immediately orders a rematch. When you're in the heat of things going on, and John McCarthy, really, it's John McCarthy and the commission's fault because there was a commissioner in the ring. John McCarthy was, but John McCarthy was almost like flabbergasted by it that he's still sitting on the stool. He's screaming for them to get out. The commissioner, though, is pointing at this huge glob of Vaseline that the UFC cut, man. You know, when this happens in boxing, that's a technique used, like spilling water in the ring and too much Vaseline. That's done to buy your fighter time, but it's the UFC cut man who left this big glob on his head. So the commissioner's screaming at Romero's corner, wipe that stuff off. Romero is in his corner men are acting like they don't understand and wiping down his back. You see, McCarthy is getting angrier by the second. He finally orders Yoel Romero to get up. And he does get up. He's still got the glob on his eye. McCarthy throws the stool. He throws the towel. And realistically, even though it was a lapse that I think, you know, it doesn't go against John. Oh, I guess it does technically go against John McCarthy. But I don't really blame him that much in that, you know, it was a heat of the moment thing. But really, I think the blame falls on the referee and the commissioner that were in the ring that should have just went, whoa, okay, stop. We're either taking a point away or we're throwing this fight out because his ass isn't up off that stool and you're obviously doing stalling techniques. If nothing else, he should have been docked a point realistically. The fight should have been over and Tim Kennedy should have won because, again, when you see this in real time, like you said, it feels like an eternity. And I have a feeling no matter what, they're not going to overturn the fight, but I definitely think the UFC is going to order a rematch. And again, you have such a built-in fight for whenever it's going to happen that I think it's going to draw interest, because it was a slobber knocker of a fight. Kennedy did rock him hard, even though he was losing the entire second round. Rocked him. He comes back. Romero goes in, rocks him. And it was a fun fight that, even though it had an ending that people are not – a lot of people are not going to be happy about, I think we can all look forward to the rematch.
Okay, listen. I don't agree that this should be overruled and turned into a no contest. And I'm going to tell you why. As you noted, it was the UFC cut man that put too big a glob on this dude's head. That's where this whole rigmarole started. So there's too much Vaseline. John McCarthy, in the heat of the moment, he needed to make a decision. And I need to make a decision because I just heard the music. So I'm going to tell you why after the break, everybody, that this should not be a no contest. So stand by. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez is here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline at USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794. XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And if you love this show, guess what? I got more shows coming up tonight. The Brian and Vinny Show returns this evening. We'll be talking SmackDown, as well as the NXT show from Wednesday night. I'll be back tomorrow with Dave Meltzer, Wrestling Observer Radio. Had a Wrestling Observer Radio last night with Dave, live from Vegas, covering the UFC. As a subscriber at WrestlingObserver.com, you get all of these shows. Two shows every single day. And on top of that, you get full access to every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005. Over 6,000 radio shows are available in our archives right now. If you love audio, this is the number one website in the world to get your pro wrestling and mixed martial arts audio, WrestlingObserver.com. You will never run out of stuff to listen to. You will have stuff every single morning on the way to work, at the gym, wherever you want to listen to your audio. If you love pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, I have no idea how you could not be a subscriber at WrestlingObserver.com. If you sign up for a long-term subscription, it is only $9.99 a month. Yes, the same price as the WWE Network, with three times the content. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. If you head up there right now, you can listen to some sample shows, of course, after this program is over, by the way. And if you like what you hear, hey, sign up. And full access anytime you want to over 6,000 shows. Interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business. We just had Trish Stratus on for two shows last week. Great shows. You can head up there and check those out, as well as every other show we've ever done. So give it a shot at WrestlingObserver.com. And before the break, I was talking about Yoel Romero, why that match should not be a no contest. Here's the deal to me. It wasn't his fault, in the sense that UFC was the ones that started the whole rigmarole with putting too much Vaseline on the dude's head. John McCarthy had an opportunity. John McCarthy had to make a choice. He could dock the guy a point. He could call for an immediate disqualification. He could rule the fight's over because the guy hasn't got off his chair yet. But he did none of that. He threw everything out of the cage and he said, "All right, let's go." And so away they went. And once John McCarthy allowed the guy to come back in and have the fight, all's fair game. It sucks for Tim Kennedy. Tim Kennedy probably, in fact, if it were me, I would give Tim Kennedy a rematch. But it is not a situation where Yoel Romero should get punished with a no contest. Yoel Romero, maybe he was sitting on that thing too long. I don't know. But when they let it go, all's fair game. And furthermore, if John McCarthy would have got upset about the whole rigmarole and he didn't end the fight and he didn't call for a DQ, but he decided that he was going to dock Yoel Romero a point, we would be exactly where we are right now, because Yoel Romero finished the fight. The docked point would have made one bit of difference. So I don't agree with switching it to a no contest, but I do think that, to be fair, they probably should give Tim Kennedy a rematch.
But if you're on Tim Kennedy's side, to be fair, that's why you have the opportunity to, and this happens in baseball, and I don't think they've ever overturned one. It happens in football, and very rarely will the NFL ever say we got it wrong. In baseball, it happens a lot where they'll actually say that you got it wrong, but we're not going to overturn the decision. In theory, though, you are supposed to be able to appeal this and have it turned into a no decision, because basically Yoel Romero was still out on his seat as he sat there on his seat, and the fight should have been over.
Well, that's the referee's call.
But that's where the commission can come in theory, and overturn such a decision. And if you're looking at the letter of the law, which obviously Tim Kennedy is going to be bringing that up, he brought it up last night, as people have brought it up today, and deservedly so. If I'm them, I'm going to go ahead and do it too. In theory, then, when you go in front of the board, this was a mistake. Our referee made a mistake that we had license. Our commissioner made a mistake that we had at the fight, and we are going to overturn this. And again, will they do it? No. But could they do it? Yes, they could. So there would be the response to that of, yes, you don't want to penalize Romero, but you've already penalized Kennedy by having him get knocked out in a fight that really should have been over and he should have been celebrated.
I know. But let's think about this. Let's think about this from a legal standpoint. Can you prove beyond reasonable doubt that Yoel Romero's corner men did not understand or deliberately, deliberately doing what they did? Or could you make an argument that maybe...
Wait, street justice or in a court of law?
Maybe they were just confused.
I get confused.
Reasonable doubt here.
Damnedest thing. You know, he
Mike
said
Semperview,
get it off.
Did you listen to Yoel Romero's interview afterwards? I mean, I have no problem believing this. These cornermen didn't know what the heck they were being told.
Well, that would mean
I don't understand a word Yoel Romero said.
G-shush's eyes, because he loves him some G-shush, and he brought up G-shush constantly in that post-fight interview.
Everyone watching with me was wondering why I was talking about being pushed in the face. And I was like, he's saying punched, punched. So maybe Yoel Romero's cornerman thought that the referee was saying, punch that stool out of here and not push it, and they were confused.
Again, another pro wrestling heel thing to do. I don't understand what you're saying. I don't know what you mean.
Maybe they didn't, though. We don't know. The point is, just book a rematch and get it over with. It was just a goofy thing that happened. It sucks for Tim Kennedy. Don't get me wrong. It sucks.
Although, I'm going to say this. It does open up, because of what we're talking about here, jokingly, it could open up something where you need to have an interpreter, or somebody needs to be getting things very straight with the referee's rules, because it is too, you know, if you've been watching this stuff and you've been watching fight sports long enough, the automatic reaction is that was intentional. They knew they should have gotten that glove off his face. But again, in a court of law, that is not something you can prove, because there is reasonable doubt. But if it's, again, if you want to, there you may, this could become something where they, if they don't want it to happen again, they make sure it's very clear.
All right, let's go to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? Seriously now. You are on the air. Who is this? Have you put me on hold as you are calling me?
Dare you?
That was one of the greatest calls in the history of this show.
That's more lucid than a lot of the calls we get sometimes.
Was that Yoel Romero calling?
That
he was confused about who was supposed to be on hold? Was that not the greatest interview of all time? Oh, look, they're calling again. Let's try this one more time. All right, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
From Minnesota.
Eric, did you just call me and put me on hold?
No, I didn't. Well, I don't know what happened, but I did try to call him.
Yeah, when you listen back to the show, you'll hear what happened. You somehow, I was on hold.
Okay, well, I apologize about that, Brian.
Okay, what's going on?
I was wondering what's going on with Brock Lesnar, because I know this past week you guys were talking about, with you and Dave and you and Vinny, that there's a chance that Brock ain't wrestling at Hell in a Cell. I was wondering when Brock will defend the title next.
Well, you know what's funny is I had heard a couple of months ago, and I'd completely forgotten about it because it was a few months ago, and especially with mixed martial arts, when you hear about something that's supposed to happen in 3 months, it's like, I just put this out of my mind because I just know it's almost certainly going to change. But I remembered it after I'd heard that he wasn't working Hell in a Cell. I had heard like 3 months ago that Brock was not working Hell in a Cell. And at the time, I didn't think anything about it. I just blocked it out of my mind because it's like, okay, who cares? It's Hell in a Cell. It's in October. It doesn't matter. So when you know, we were doing the show last week and we were trying to figure out a finish for the Night of Champions. And if you guys recall correctly, I did call a disqualification finish. I thought that we'd get a screw job finish at Night of Champions, and that would build to John Cena against Brock Lesnar at Hell in a Cell. So Night of Champions occurs, which we can talk about later, and they do a screw job finish, disqualification. Seth Rollins ran in and hit John Cena with the briefcase. And so when the show was over, it was just like, okay, obviously they're doing what I expected. They did a screw job finish to lead to Brock versus Cena at Hell in a Cell in October. So if you watch Raw, nothing was leading towards Brock Lesnar at Hell in a Cell. And essentially, I was reminded, you knew 3 months ago that Brock was not working Hell in a Cell. And in fact, that is not one of his dates. He's not going to be working Hell in a Cell. I don't even know when his next date is. But unless they sign some sort of deal, as far as I know, last week they were working with the idea that he is not going to be on that show. So they're going to be doing something else.
Yeah, I got to eat some crow on that too. But realistically, the way it sounds like they have things set up, it can also set up Brock Lesnar, John Cena at Survivor Series, the next pay-per-view after. So it's not
sure.
It's really not that's that big of a deal. But they did a poor job on Monday. With no Paul Heyman on there, there's no response to from either one of those guys against Rollins, nothing. They just all of a sudden went, okay, he's not going to be on the next show. We're just going to forget about him for a while.
It was very weird.
Okay, I got one more question. I know I've been watching a lot of older WCW shows on the network, and I know the WCW title wasn't defended at every pay-per-view. I want to get your guys' thoughts on if, I don't know, it won't ever happen, but could the U.S. or the Intercontinental title be bumped up to like what the title meant back in the 80s or 90s, for the title doesn't have to be defended at every pay-per-view?
Well, you know, it could, but I don't think they're going to do it because they've buried the title for so long. What will probably happen, and what's going to happen, I'm sure, this month, is the title will not be defended, but John Cena is going to be in the main event. They'll just take whoever they think their biggest stars and their biggest feuds are, and they will have those be the main events if Brock is not going to be on the show defending.
To me, they can absolutely increase the, you know, all they have to do is merge the titles together. You know, when you have Sheamus, and I don't know when Barrett's coming back, but look at what Sheamus and Cesaro did last week. You know, Ziggler, if you can get him to rein it in, you know, fits in there too. Where, I mean, you could actually, in theory, make that title something. The thing is, though, you cannot have anybody on that roster, maybe with the exception of Brock Lesnar, treating it like it is kryptonite once they get it. Now, granted, they've done an awful job with that belt, and any of those belts mean nothing right now. But if you wanted to rehab it, one of the things that goes into that is you can't be afraid. John Cena couldn't be afraid to have the Intercontinental title. He should take it seriously. Again, look at what they've done with the IWGP IC title in Japan, where they have their top guys going after it and vying for it and treating it like it's important. I think you can have Cesaro's and the Sheamus's. You know, they need to be pushed up into that top mix anyway, because the only thing you're left with right now is Cena, Orton, Rollins, and Reigns. Cena, Orton, Rollins, and Ambrose. That's it. And you're a Cena injury away from having a complete disaster. So they need more guys in that mix. You could rehab that belt, because I'm of the opinion, being a little bit older, you don't have to defend the world title on every single pay-per-view. And if somebody like Brock has it,
you don't have to.
And if somebody like Brock has it, I wouldn't want it defended on every pay-per-view.
No, that's what makes it special. That is what makes these shows more valuable. And you can use them. If you've got a guy like Brock, you can use them during your supposed renewal. I don't agree with this whole having a renewal period that you worry about deal. It seems very carny to me. Like, you should just presume all the time that people may be renewing. But if you're going to work around renewal periods, use a guy like Brock, who is a special attraction. We got to head to a break. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And a quick reminder, the replay of this show on Sports Byline USA tomorrow at 7 o'clock a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern, we will be replaying Hour 2. We will be replaying the hour that has not occurred yet because it is coming up in about 5 minutes. Had a couple of technical difficulties on my end kicking off the show, and so we will not be replaying hour number one, but hour two will replay tomorrow if you want to check it out. Very happy that there is a new board in the studio. It just sounded a lot better on your end now, so hopefully everybody is enjoying that. And we got a lot of news to get into in hour number two. We're going to talk a lot more about the WWE Night of Champions pay-per-view, Brock Lesnar, how this plays into the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, and more. Plus, this is the week where TNA should have been over, should have been finished. Their contract with Spike TV is expiring, and if it were not for Spike TV being nice enough to allow them to continue on week to week through the end of the year, they would be done for. But Spike TV has allowed them to do so. They are still looking for a new television provider. They're claiming they've got at least four suitors, which is interesting because I don't know if WWE had four suitors when they were looking for television. So I don't know what that means, but we'll see what happens. The word internally is that there should be an announcement sometime soon. People are being assured that they will be on TV in 2015. So I guess we shall see. Nothing is official until it's official. And you all know that if you've read Death of WCW, which I will also talk about in hour number two. People are already receiving their copy of Death of WCW. It's not supposed to be out for another 2 weeks, but people have already had it shipped by Amazon. We'll talk about it after the break and much, much more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi is here. I believe he's multitasking, doing the show and watching football at the same time. And we got a lot of news to talk about today.
Possibly.
Is that right? What's going on in the game, Mike? Give everybody a sporting update.
Teddy Bridgewater is pretty good. I can say that as he just completed a pass to Jarius Wright for 15 yards, driving the ball down to the Atlanta 8-yard line, and things not looking good for my Falcons, who are up one right now with 13:30 left in the fourth.
Can you believe that it's football season and Raw is going head-to-head with Monday Night Football and putting on some of the most boring shows imaginable?
It really bothers me. I don't know if we talked about it last week really at all. I know you did with a lot of other people, and a lot of the other people just talked about it in general. I guess it's okay. I guess if you want to kind of focus around the time that the Monday night game is going to halftime and taking advantage of people that may be jumping around with their remotes at that time. But what the thing is, and a lot of people don't remember this because there's a lot of younger people that are listening to the show whose only memory of the Monday Night Wars, they have, you know, some memories of it, but to drive it home, at that time, the WWF didn't care. They were so worried about WCW and putting on the best show that they could and sticking it down WCW's throat. That's how those shows ended up being football, because they were putting on fun displays. And it's troubling, especially because it's not even Monday Night Football. It's not even the NFL's crown jewel anymore. That's reserved for Sunday nights on NBC now. If they would just put on the best show that they possibly could, the most coherent show that they possibly could, and stop writing the show as the show is
actually
going
stand
on.
By let's continue this after the break. Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. That's right, you heard the man. Call right now, 855-478-4478. That is 855-478-4478. It is Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here, and the phones are ringing. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
It's Kevin Marshall calling from Manhattan.
Kevin, what's up?
Not much. I was just laid off by WWE a couple months ago, and I want to give them some perspective on the writing process.
So you were just laid off?
Yeah, back at the end of July.
All right. Well, that'll be great. Let's hear it.
All right. Thanks.
So what's the process like there?
Sorry, no.
Yeah, don't do that, because I'm going to start asking you about catering, because I'm very interested in craft services at these places.
Oh, Mike, come on now. How was the experience working for WWE?
Guys, I got to put you on hold. Hold on. I got to put you on hold. Yeah, so basically everything is micromanaged to death. And I know there's a lot of talk of they over there when we talk about the writing process for the show.
Sure.
It's no secret that the buck stops with Vince. But when I was there, and I guess it had started sometime before even I started there back last October, he was micromanaging everything to death. And basically you're sitting there and you're trying to write for him and you're trying to figure out what he wants. And the job basically became very quickly trying to figure out what Vince is thinking and then having him tell you he's changed his mind. So, you know, when we talk about the show being written as it's happening, what I need people to know is that that show was likely written well in advance, or there was an attempt at it, but either nothing got approved or everything got scrapped and rewritten by the man himself.
So what was your exact role with WWE?
I was a writer.
Just a writer. So how many writers were you working with? I mean, I know that there's like a kind of a writer hierarchy. How many people were involved in the process?
God, too many for me to count. I mean, there was an entire home team, which mostly got gutted in the layoffs. And then there was an entire road team as well. I mean, there was
Kevin, explain exactly, I guess, for people who may not know what the home and the road team thing actually means.
The home team means that I was part of the home team, which meant we were actually stationed in Stamford itself in the tower. And we were cordoned off in a room that had windows that didn't open. And we would sit around and pitch ideas and write the show. And then the road team would come in on Thursdays. Now, the road team are the guys who actually travel to every Raw and SmackDown pay-per-view.
So when you
pretty much,
well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, pretty much like those guys, I mean, they write as well, and they do some of the rewrites on the road, but they're also acting as, like, producers and directors, et cetera. So it's one of those things where, you know, everybody does everybody else's job, so nobody is able to do it well.
So you would sit there on whatever day it was, and you guys would all brainstorm, and you would come up with a script for the show, and you would write different dialogue for people and such, I would presume. And then
right.
you would turn it in to hope that it got approved. And what percentage of the time did it get approved?
I mean, usually a lot of our process was just figuring out what Vince would and wouldn't approve ahead of time and trying to vet it out in that sense. Sometimes we would get stuff through. I would say like a little more than half the time we'd go in with a Raw script on Thursday and, you know, stuff would be presented to him, the tent poles of the show. And he would say, all right, that sounds good. And we would write it. And then it would get all the way to the production meeting. And sometimes stuff would get rewritten. There wasn't really a consistent thing where, you know, I could say, oh, well, some weeks, you know, everything got through. Other weeks, nothing got through. It was a crapshoot. I mean, there were some days where he would just sit there and listen to the producers and then completely rewrite it on the spot in front of us. There were other weeks where the production meetings would go like, you know, a half an hour to an hour, and then he would just say, all right, let's do it.
Was there, I mean, looking back now, how long did you last with the company?
I was there for a little over 9 months. And honestly, if the network launch hadn't happened the way it did, and if, you know, the layoffs hadn't occurred, I would have been there longer.
Sure. Now, if you, I mean, looking from the outside now and having been on the inside,
yeah.
I mean, if you could, is there a way to streamline this process and make it better? Because whenever I hear about the writing team, it's like, this just seems like such a rigmarole. I mean, it seems like it could be streamlined. It seems like there should be an easier way to do this. What do you think?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, of course it could be, you know, and those guys that are still there, you know, God bless them. There's some really talented and brilliant individuals that are still there that could and occasionally do put on great shows. But, you know, they're Sisyphus pushing that boulder up a hill. There are many ways to streamline it. There were attempts made to streamline it while I was there, but it seems like over the years it's been an endless cycle of, okay, well, we could do this and this and this better. And everybody that comes in there looks at it and says, you know, none of this makes sense. This is chaos. There's got to be a better way. And of course there could be, but then, you know, eventually they run into an obstacle.
Kevin, you obviously listen to a lot of people who call into this show and they wonder why about things and we wonder why about things. What is the biggest misconception when it comes to probably the average hardcore fan that would be listening to this show? What's their biggest misconception when it comes to, quote unquote, the writers? Because obviously a lot of podcasts are out now with guys talking about booking, you know, from back in the day. Bill Watts was just on Jim Ross's broadcast, and booking committees and things like that are always brought up. But what's the biggest misconception when it comes to fans and what the writers are actually doing and how they're handcuffed?
Well, I think the biggest misconception is that we sit around and, you know, we decide who gets pushed and who doesn't, that we sit there and lay out, like, what the tempos are going to be for the year. Like, you know, hey, John Cena should win the title. Well, we don't make those decisions. We don't make those calls on finishes. You know, we don't sit there and hold talent back. You know what I mean? I think that's the biggest misconception, is the idea that, you know, we just sit around and we bury talent and we try to come up with ideas to make everybody look stupid. That's certainly not the case. Everybody... at least just speaking from a writer perspective, I never met anybody that was in the business of trying to make somebody else look bad. And I think it's very easy when you watch our product, and I think just when you watch professional wrestling in general, to get the impression that, wow, they're really going out of their way to make this guy look stupid. It's just a combination of things. One, there's a lot of politics that go on behind the scenes that the creative team is not in control of. Two, you know, there are certain guys that probably are their own worst enemy, as we all are, myself included. And, you know, it's a lot harder than it works, especially when you have a limited roster, which when you thumb through it on WWE.com, that roster looks huge. When you lay it down on a piece of paper and you have to fill like 16 segments for Monday and then 12 for Tuesday, which is SmackDown, and then you have main event and superstars and everything, it's really, really hard. And that extra hour of television on Raw on Mondays, it's necessary from a monetary and financial standpoint, because you can't say no to the kind of money that USA is laying down. You just simply can't. If the WWE said, no, we're only going to do 2 hours and screw the money, they'd be idiots to do that. And
sure,
they're a publicly traded company. They can't afford to do that. But that extra hour is exponential. That extra hour is like an extra 8 hours of television when you're laying out a show and you're trying to figure out what fits where and like how to execute it.
Now, did you say a moment ago that Vince hates us?
No, I said we.
Oh, we. Okay.
No,
okay.
Yeah.
I see.
I was being facetious.
I was hoping that you had some information about how much Vince hated us. I'd like to hear that.
Like Dana White bloggers.
No. Dana White hates your ass. But Vince, I mean, I don't even know if he knows you exist.
Exactly.
I don't know if he knows if anything exists outside of his plane.
That's kind of what I figured, in fact. So, at the end of the day, I mean, how did you, actually, I guess we can go back. How did you get this job?
I saw a posting that I thought was for writing for the website, and they ended up bringing me in for creative.
Wow. And when
true
they
story, yeah.
Would you go back?
I mean, I would love to say no and be like, oh God, I would never deal with that again. If I'm being honest with myself, I would again in a heartbeat, just because, you know, I love professional wrestling. I love those moments like we had at WrestleMania 30 with Daniel Bryan. And I love those moments like even the Mask versus Mask match I watched a couple weekends ago. Like, that was cathartic. You know what I mean? When wrestling is at its highest highs, for me and for so many other fans, there's nothing better. And it's really hard to explain, but like I would never turn down an opportunity to work in pro wrestling again, just because, unfortunately, and I think you guys know this more than me even, I love it too damn much. You
sure.
Know, you guys are doing this show. You guys do your writing and everything, and I'm sure you don't make money hand over fist doing it, but you love this business so goddamn much you're willing to put up with, like, even the board.
Brian's got a gold bow. What are you talking
even
about?
Even the board. Kevin, I want to thank you so much for the call, and please keep in touch. We'd love to have you call back anytime. We're going to head to a break, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, for 2 hours. And I was on my Amazon account here a moment ago, and I was alerted that many, many, many copies of Death of WCW have already been shipped. And in fact, heard today, the first reports are in, quote, "This book is awesome." This is, of course, my book with R.D. Reynolds, The Death of WCW, the 10th Anniversary Edition. It is supposed to be out on October 12th, but apparently it is being shipped right now. I know that some people have already received their copy. I've got my author copies here. The hardcover looks awesome. And if you have not ordered yet, I don't know what you're waiting for. The book is available at Amazon.com. It'll be available at all booksellers. If you happen to have a Barnes & Noble near you, for example, any brick-and-mortar store, as I believe they are called, it's available on Kindle, paperback, hardcover. You can actually order it through the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. If you head up there and scroll down, there's a picture of the cover right there, Death of WCW. Click through that, and you can order your copy. Very, very excited. Everybody should be getting it this week. Hopefully you all love the book. It is revised, expanded, 456 pages. It's gigantic. And yes, Mike, it's dedicated to you. Actually, it's not, but I do give you a big thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that. And not that you need a testimonial for it, but and it's not that I'm biased here either. The book really is laugh out loud funny in two ways. One, because with you and R.D. Reynolds and how you frame some of these stories, I mean, it is in a very entertaining and funny book. It's also funny to see some of these mistakes that were made over and over again inside that company. And it's, you know, a lot of people probably who are watching the network and watching the WWF's take on history or WWE's take on history and have heard Eric Bischoff talk about, you know, his take on those shows and how it's framed, WCW's framed on some of those WWE shows. This really is the truth about how, you know, how things went down, and you really put it out in such an incredible and fun way. And the best part about it is, as somebody who likes books, it's in hardcover.
That's right. It's in hardcover, everybody. So head up there and check that out. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this? Sorry about that.
They got off the line right away and went to order the book. You don't have to do that. You can continue to call.
That's right. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Jim from Virginia.
Jim, my man, what's up?
Okay. I got a question. I was just thinking about it, and I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you guys, because you're the ones in the know. Whatever happened to Wrestlelicious?
Oh, my God. Wrestlelicious?
I know it's on the Flips app where you can find like shows like Wrestlelicious and Traditional Championship Wrestling who are not doing their any new shows or anything like that. They're still available to be viewed on, I know, the Flips app as well as a couple other places as well. I know there was a plan for them to have a second season, but I don't know exactly where, what was his name, JB Money or whoever it was, the guy who hit Powerball and decided to start up a group. I don't know whatever happened with that.
Honest to God, Jim, when it comes to Wrestlelicious, I presume that you're the man in the know, not me.
I don't know. We never did get it much where I live in my hometown. We never did get it much.
I don't know what
happened on that.
It was a Comcast staple for us, that and Saw out of Nashville, with which was great if you got an episode that was relatively recent, but unfortunately, too many of them were not.
Another question. I just wanted to.
I can't imagine, Jim, just very quickly, I can't imagine winning $35 million in Powerball and my first idea is to start a women's wrestling promotion.
Hey, it depends on where your priorities are at.
You know, that's,
I'd buy as many women as I could.
I was going to ask a question. WSU is kind of like more of a hardcore women's promotion.
Okay.
All right, Lufisto is the champion right now. You know, she's hardcore, Anna, whatever you want to call her. She's got the little doll, the little peekaboo, or whatever you want to call it, Pikachu, whatever it's called. All right, now, they did a thing at the last show that they had where they keep bringing these guys in. They're called the Juicy Project. One of the guys' name is DJ Hyde.
Okay, I've heard of DJ Hyde, yeah.
And after she beat the Allison Kay, she won the match. DJ Hyde and Sassy Steffi came into the ring, and they started doing their bit and everything with them. And she didn't answer the way DJ Hyde wanted. See, they basically wanted her to give herself to DJ Hyde. And you know, as the baby faced hero, she balked at it. Okay.
All right.
Well, all right. They just after that, DJ Hyde just beat the hell out of her, just blooded her up, and just all over now. Why would you do that to the number one babyface?
Well, I hope this will lead to her against DJ Hyde and she beats him.
I hope so, too. But, I mean, the blood was – it was like a – you remember how, like, a Mono Mike knows, and you do, too. The blood was like an old Flair-Wahoo McDaniel match. It was everywhere.
Well, let me say something about blood, because I, in fact, have gigged in my lifetime twice and never again, by the way. You never know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, when you're going to cut yourself, you're hoping for the best. And probably 90% of the time, you do it right. You get a little bit of blood. You're sweating a little bit. It looks worse than it really is, the whole nine yards. But, man, you never know. You cut yourself in the wrong place, and it's 100 times worse than you expected. And it may have been a situation where they were going to get a little bit of blood, but oops, something went wrong, and now it's just like a bloodbath. And
well,
significantly.
I don't know about that. I think considering the names are involved here, no, that's probably what they were going for.
Well, I guess it is Lufisto. You may be right.
And there's, you know, in CZW, DJ Hyde is obviously the owner and is the main guy of. They've done these matches with, like, Mia Yim. I'll never understand it. I don't get it. I don't know why there's so many taking place right now of these men versus women matches or these men versus women. You know, and again, I know whether the woman wants the match or not. And again, if you're a wrestler, you're gonna go out there and work. And these women could be getting taken great care of. Maybe I'm too old. I just don't understand why there's so many of them. I don't understand why they're so violent. I don't understand the point of a lot of these things. And it certainly is not my bag in any way. And I know it may be completely, you know, not right in that I have no problem watching two women in an MMA fight do that. But I've always had a real disconnect when it comes to professional wrestling and women being in that, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, they did a lot in the 80s, you know, the baby Jim Cornette hitting Baby Doll in the gut with a tennis racket and things like that. And obviously, you know, Mae Young and the Dudleys, and obviously she was probably more hyped about it than anybody else. So I don't, you know, it's up to everybody's own personal preference. I'm just not a big fan of it. And it seems to be a lot of it going on a lot of the indies.
One last thing. Was I correct? Didn't Paige say there would be no more skipping?
Was this on SmackDown?
No, I don't. I was either on SmackDown or Raw this week.
They didn't do a Scott Sanford breaking update for that?
I hope so, because I'm so dang tired of seeing that.
I'm going to watch SmackDown after this show, so I can't help you with that one. But
Jim, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
Are you going to buy the TNA Knockouts calendar? Because I believe that I may buy that Knockout Town calendar just for Taryn and Rebel.
Just might.
That might be the one piece of merchandise. They'll make far more money off of that than they will the Willow umbrella, I'm sure.
Well, what's going to happen? I thought they had the already taped pay-per-view for the girls, the Knockouts Knockdown for this year.
I think they've taped it, but I don't know when it's supposed to air.
I always thought it was either September or October.
Let's see if I can find out. Knockouts Knockdown 2.
Like go the way of WrestleLicious.
That's right. Let's see if we've got a date here for when this is supposed to air. Let's see. Knockouts Knockdown 2 has already been taped, as has been noted. All right, hold on. Stand by, everybody. This is very important. All right, this took place on May 10th, and I do not believe it has aired yet. So I don't know when. So World Cup of Wrestling aired on September 5th, which means, and the previous one aired in August. So this should be airing sometime in October, Jim.
Sounds like a winner to me.
Because they're doing one a month of these taped pay-per-views. So, actually, you know what? It may not even be till November, because October may be Bound for Glory, so you may have to wait till November.
Oh, well, like I said, I hope they get them a new contract, but they don't look good for the TV.
I think they'll get a new TV deal, Jim, but you may not get it in your area. If you couldn't get WrestleLicious, you may not get this new Impact.
How at the beginning of the show, it's like TNA's got four suitors. WWE only had like one, but the one was NBC Universal.
Well, that's right. They had one big suitor, not four small ones.
Y'all have a good one now.
Thanks so much, Jim. All right, to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, it's John from Arkansas.
John, what's up?
Oh, not much. I'm outside on my deck smoking myself a nice cigar and listening to your fine program.
Well, about that.
looking at the Death of WCW hardcover on my Amazon app.
Wow. Hey, listen, why don't you stand by? We're going to head to a break, but we'll hold you over and we'll come back to you after the break. All right, back in a moment, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Got knocked off the air, it looked like, but we are back. And we got a caller here on the line. You're on the air again. Sorry about that. What's going on?
Oh, not much. This is John from Arkansas. I'm just sitting here enjoying the show and smoking myself a cigar while I listen to you guys and looking at the Death of WCW book on my Amazon app.
Are you reading it right now?
I'm thinking of treating myself to that as a Christmas present for me.
How about that? I think you should do that. It's a great book, I've been told.
I do too.
You know what the problem is, though, with the e-versions of the book?
What's that?
Because, you know, none of the pop-ups can come up on that like they can in the other version.
The pop-ups?
That's one thing that will be lost for a generation of kids now growing up with iPads, the pop-up book.
I thought you were going to say that I couldn't autograph it, but I'll autograph your iPad. All right, go on, John.
No, I'd just love to hear the actual legitimate history and not the revisionist history that WWE likes to put on things. So I'm sure it's far more entertaining and way more accurate.
Well, we did go through. There were some things in the first book that I took out because, with the benefit of hindsight and further information, they were actually not accurate. I think we had Eric Bischoff responsible for the Team Challenge series, I believe, in the first book, and he was not responsible. So anything that we found that was not factually accurate, we took out.
I don't know. He was responsible for the commentary during that thing.
Well, yeah. But we did also go back, and there's been a lot of quotes both on this radio show and a lot of other radio shows as well. So we were able to go back and get a lot of confirmation of things. For people that claim that, you know, we weren't there and we don't know what happened, we talked to plenty of people that were there and did know what happened, and they confirmed virtually everything that we wrote in the original book. So we expanded it. We added more in. It's a much better book. Trust me.
Brian, throw in here real quick. Were people more willing to talk to you this time about it with the benefit of hindsight?
Yeah, they were on the radio shows and doing all sorts of stuff. It was much easier.
I was going to say, your conversation with the young man who was the writer for WWE.
Yes.
The fact that I've always believed that Vince is slightly bipolar.
I don't know if bipolar would be the right way. He just changes his mind a lot. He just I don't know why. I think, you know, a bipolar person would be more like, you know, he'd come in one day, he'd be happy. He'd come in the next day, he'd be throwing things around. His more just like he had an idea and then he thought about it and then he thought something else might be better and then he thought about it. And, you know, I don't know if there's a diagnosis, but I just think that he's very apt to change his mind at the wrong time, like when the show's on the air.
Tunnel vision with it as well, too.
That's right.
I mean, it's just, it's not that hard. Just run with your first instinct. That's usually the best idea. And, you know, there's always time that you can change things at a later date if you don't like the direction. But run with the course that you've already charted out. I mean, that's like trying to make a direct U-turn in traffic, you know, or something like that at an intersection. It's like, oh, hold on, I'm going to pull left. Oh, wait, no, I'm going to pull right.
Yes, it's much better to change your mind after you've taken the turn than right before and you crash into the median. That is correct.
Yeah. That's kind of what Raw was here this past week. It was a crash into the median.
It's been like that for weeks now, actually.
I know, and I'm like, I want to support everything that they're doing, but I'm just kind of like, why are you doing this to me? My head hurts watching this show.
Well, I want to thank you very much for the call, and thanks for checking out the book. It has been very tough to watch Raw lately. Raw is tomorrow. I have no idea what they're doing. I don't know if they have any idea what they're doing. Sometimes on Sunday, I get the report that we have no Raw script yet. I haven't gotten that yet. But, yeah, it's been rough. Where do you think they're going for Hell in a Cell, Mike?
I would have figured Cena and Raw. I guess, to me, I would do Rollins and what Dave said, the possibility of Seth Rollins or John Cena facing off against Dean Ambrose with the the winner to get Seth Rollins, the loser to get Randy Orton. I would assume both men will be beaten down after that match by both Orton and Rollins. And I guess I'm okay with that, especially because Brock Lesnar is not going to be on the card. I think seeds have started to be planted with Randy Orton, and I'm not saying he's the best face turn in the world or it's going to make the most impact, but at least it will be something. And I think having something happen at Hell in the Cell that leads into Survivor Series being in St. Louis, which is obviously his hometown and where he is received very well, I think doing something there and having him lay somebody out on a table, I think that's, at least from that part, that's what that's going to lead into. And then Cena and Rollins would probably make the most sense to me, you know, because if you have Orton in there with Ambrose, Orton can complain again that, you know, I get the loser and I get the psychopath that you've brought on yourself and I have to fight off all the time, Seth. And I think you could do something in that direction that leaves Cena and Rollins, and you know, Cena can get a win over Rollins. To me, I wouldn't be happy with doing that. I'd rather have Rollins win. Hopefully you can do something where, God, heaven forbid, John Cena doesn't lose face, but Rollins gets the win. The opposite, Cena gets the win. It's not the end of the world or anything. It's just, why have Rollins get beat when he's still got the Money in the Bank briefcase? Just because you can beat him and he'll still have the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Well, the problem with the idea of turning Randy Orton babyface, especially if you wait until Survivor Series, is they need a babyface like yesterday. And if you turn him babyface at Survivor Series, you're turning him babyface literally 1 month before Daniel Bryan's going to come back, Roman Reigns is going to come back. You're going to end up having all of these top babyfaces and no top heels. So I don't know what they do. I don't like have a solution. I'm just saying I don't know if that's the best solution.
I'm not 100% sure if you're getting Reigns and Bryan back at the same time that you don't either turn. I don't know what you do with Reigns, but you better be careful, because if you're still looking at him to be the top guy and Daniel Bryan is around, that's going to be a big, big problem. Forget about Randy Orton. The other two are going to be a bigger problem.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with that, but the idea seemed to be that they were both coming back right around. And you know,
well,
there is
will Batista be back? I mean, because I would figure
actually
at some
he's
point,
supposed to be back. There's another top babyface.
Well, I mean, he could be a heel when he comes back. Rusev by that point will be getting built up for something, I'm sure, for WrestleMania in the first quarter of the year, and we'll see him in an Elimination Chamber. I would assume something like that's going to take place. I don't know when Barrett's going to be back, but Sheamus is somebody who could very easily turn heel. And again, you have Cesaro there. And whatever their thing is with Sheamus and Cesaro, they're not going to be in the tippity-top mix. Okay, fine. But they can be there in the mix with those other four or five guys who are up there, both as heels if you need them to be.
Well, you know, the other thing with Reigns and Bryan both coming back is that you don't need to throw both of them in the Royal Rumble and have a problem. You know, Daniel Bryan, he vacated the championship because of his neck. And so you can very easily, his first match back can either A, be against Kane to get revenge, or better yet, he makes his first match back return against Brock Lesnar at the Rumble. And so you don't have a competition between him and Reigns. Reigns is trying to win the Rumble. Bryan's trying to win the title. Brock beats Bryan. Reigns wins the Rumble. And then you figure out something for Bryan to do where people are satisfied with what he's doing. Now, there may not be anything. There may be no satisfaction until he wins the title. I don't know. But you can try.
Chris Jericho, because to me, do you go legend or you try to build something that's on the roster already? To me, you'd have to reach outside the box a little bit and give people something where it's, you know, don't look at the main event over here, guys. We know what you want with Daniel Bryan. We're giving him this Michaels Undertaker type of thing or Michaels Flair type of thing where there's no title involved, but you should be happy with this epic.
Now, Chris Jericho is going to be leaving pretty soon. I don't even know when. He may even be gone already. His book is also, by the way, coming out on October 12th. You can pre-order them both together as a package, by the way, at Amazon.com. Ooh. So he's going to be out touring and doing his music and that sort of thing. It looks like they're turning Mark Henry heel. He did kind of a mini heel turn on main event. He'll probably do the full-fledged heel turn on Monday.
I don't think Henry and Swagger have legs as top heels.
You don't think so?
As much as I like Mark Henry, I think there's nothing. I mean, I don't know if you can put him into the mix against an Ambrose and have people care or swagger and do that. I mean, he's unfortunately he could be mid card for life. Now making them a tag team and giving them something to do, working with younger guys or working with the Usos to give them something to do or something like that, that's fine. I just don't think, I think at this point, the way they've both been portrayed, especially the way Henry went out losing and then passing out the next night, which they had completely ass backwards, I don't think, how much more can you really get out of them?
Well, I don't know. I just, I'm actually looking through some of the recent Raw.
What about Speed Force?
Oh, because Speed Force, the new name for what I thought was going to be the new nation. Speed Force, terrible name. It'll probably change.
It's a very like ROH name, but I mean, Big E Langston.
It'll probably change by tomorrow. I'm sure it'll be changed by tomorrow. I'd be stunned if it were not.
Global Force.
Yeah. What else do we have in the news here? We got to get through this here before the show ends. Bound for Glory. We've got one match, which is Samoa Joe defending a title that he does not currently have against Low Key and Kaz Hayashi, which I don't know how they're going to explain this in Japan. I guess the story is that he'll just come out without a belt. And if you're watching in Japan, they'll announce that Low Key is the champion. Because he is the champion right now, for those of you not confused enough. In America, they'll announce that Joe is the champion or that it is a non-title match. One match for Bound for Glory, Mike. It's 2 weeks away.
Corican Hall holds, what, I should know this, sorry, off the top of my head, 2,500 people or so, something like that.
It's about $2,000, probably.
I wonder if they're going to get 50 paid in there, and I have no idea what it. I haven't been keeping track, obviously.
Well, I'm sure Wrestle One's going to promote it, so they'll get more than 50 paid. But
still, I mean, you know, it's not like it was back in the day. There are savvy enough wrestling fans in Japan that even have to be shaking their head at this. I know Wrestle One is shaking their head at this, and I. This has been a disaster, and unfortunately for TNA, I don't blame them because they have got to focus on what's important, which is the home. But with that said, it was a ill-advised idea to hold that thing over there, no matter what money they got from Wrestle One or what they got from the Japanese to have the thing over there. It was ill-conceived to do it, and it's just a lame duck, poor show that I hope will somehow benefit the Wrestle One guys, because it's not going to do anything for the TNA guys.
So Bound for Glory is coming up in a couple of weeks. And of course, we still got 4 more weeks before Hell in a Cell. So I'm not exactly sure where they're going to go in the next 4 weeks, but we're going to find out more about that tomorrow. I have not watched NXT yet, but that's certainly going to be, I'm watching that and SmackDown tonight, and then the Brian and Vinny show later on tonight. We're going to review both of those shows. So that should be fun. No Total Divas review tonight. That's probably going to be tomorrow evening with my buddy Wang. Have you watched any of these yet, Mike?
Total Divas? No, but unfortunately they had a Comcast free preview since I cut the cord.
Oh.
So Jess was, my wife was actually watching episodes while I was trying to take care of things and watch the pay-per-view last week. It's been very painful.
What did she have to say about it?
She can't understand why people would like Brie Bella either over Nikki Bella.
Well, there is that. We can talk more about this after the break. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody, on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And as noted, Total Divas takes place tonight on E! Mike's wife, I'm sure, is going to be very excited for this. As is mine, I'm sure. So if you want to check that out, you can do that. SmackDown was Friday. NXT was Wednesday or Thursday. Vinny and I will be back tonight talking all of these shows. Only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. So if you're not yet signed up, head over there and check it out. And as noted, you'll never run out of audio. Don't forget, while I'm on the subject of plugs, Death of WCW, my newest book, the 10-year anniversary edition, is shipping right now from Amazon.com. So if you're interested, I suggest you head over and check it out. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and yes, a Kindle edition. So you can be reading it. I think you'll have to probably wait till October 12th for the Kindle edition, since that's the official release date. But I know that the paper and the hard copies are, they're shipping now. They are in people's hot little hands. We've already got one person who's received the book, and he said it's great. So head up there and check that out. Death of WCW on Amazon.com. Of course, tomorrow is Raw. 4 weeks until WWE Hell in a Cell. Brock Lesnar is not working the show. And so we've got to get a main event, something involving John Cena, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, Randy Orton. The rumor is they will have a John Cena, Dean Ambrose match at the beginning of Hell in a Cell. And then whoever wins that match gets a shot at Seth Rollins in a Hell in a Cell match. And the loser will get a shot at Randy Orton in a Hell in a Cell match. That was the working idea as of a couple of days ago. So I guess we'll follow that up and see where that goes tomorrow as well. We'll be back next week here with a brand new show. I want to thank Mike, as always, all the folks at Sports Byline USA, and of course, all of you, the listeners. Check out WrestlingObserver.com for more. And that is it from here. We'll talk to you next week. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.